Walk with us, Arizona, as we go around the backyard and see if we can't find Mr. Jay Harper somewhere. As he's usually in the garden this time of morning on a Saturday morning. You're tuned in to Rosie on the House, Arizona's Saturday morning tradition for 28 years. Your host, Rosie Romero, is here standing by with Jennifer's call screening at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. Mike's on the board, and Jay is here to talk to you about anything you would like to know about your garden, landscape, flowers, trees, weather, philosophy.
Sure.
Sure?
Yeah, let's do it. Rosie stole my thunder a little bit in the first hour, if you were listening, because he was already spilled the beans about this as our kind of one of our first kickoff weekends for fertilizing citrus. You know, we just like to use the holidays as an easy way for folks to remember, you know, when the good times to feed citrus. And when we're talking about feeding citrus, it's really pretty much everything. Most of our, you know, heat-loving, subtropical, desert trees, shrubs, vines, this is a great time to be fertilizing now that, you know, we're in the waning days of the hot weather. And
you promise?
I looked at the seven-day forecast out there before I came in, and I think today or tomorrow is the last 100-degree day forecast for the next 7 days.
Nice.
Doesn't mean we won't have some more later on, but there's actually a pretty good chance of rain the middle part of next week and on. So
great.
You know, the mornings are getting a little better.
Absolutely.
The night, it cools off quicker because the days are just shorter. So the reason to feed a lot of stuff is, man, a lot of yards are pretty beat up after this summer. It was a pretty tough summer on a lot of plants. And we'll take
on a lot of people, too.
Well, that goes without saying. That fertilizing this time of year, while it's still warm, yet we're still a long ways off from, you know, the threat of getting cold, and we don't want to push a lot of growth later into the fall and have it get cold on us. But we do need to recover, and plants will take that opportunity then to replace a lot of that damaged foliage with new foliage, and we can help them by fertilizing this time of year, especially while the soil temperatures are still warm enough and the plants are still actively growing to get some good nutrients in there and push some new fall growth. So good recovery growth. Of course, we, you know, September, as soon as September hits, the list of vegetables that you can plant in the garden just goes up about tenfold from what it was in June, July, and August. So now we're talking about planting cool season crops. And those are in general, and we've given this tip before, but in general, a way to remember what we plant for cool season here are things you eat the root, the leaf, the stem of. So, you know, carrots, beets, radishes, turnips, lettuce, spinach, chard, kale, broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, celery, those types of things are all, you know, winter or cool season vegetables.
And you mentioned looking forward in the 7-day forecast, there may be some rain coming. That's another incentive. Use this 3-day weekend to get some of that granular fertilizer down. You have Mother Nature's going to help you get it in the ground.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we,
again, you promise?
We're going to talk about it. We'll go and put the kibosh on it real quick by talking about it. But, Romy and I were at a conference Thursday, and one of the little classes I was teaching for Arizona Certified Nursery Professionals, we had Peter Condon from Mesa Community College come over and talk about. And one of the things we don't realize is that most of the feeder roots, the little hair roots that take up nutrients for all trees and shrubs, are really very shallow. They're in the top 12 inches or so of the soil. The deep roots help anchor the tree and support the tree and keep it from blowing over, and that's why we want a tree to be deep-rooted. But the fertilizing uptake, the hair roots, the feeder roots, are real shallow. So you get a good granular fertilizer on there and get a little bit of rain, and it only has to wash it in, you know, 6, 8, 10, 12 inches, and boom, you're in hog heaven as far as feeding those trees. So yes, it would be a great time, pre-emergent herbicide applications. Fall, first day of fall, first day of spring, if you want to remember the two best times to apply pre-emergent herbicides. So we're fast approaching that, so this would be a great weekend to get that down too.
Now, I had a conversation with, at the Shade Conference, there was a gentleman there from Dow, which is, used to own Surfland. And a couple weeks ago, we got a call from a gentleman in Tucson, mm-hmm. wanted to know if he could use Surfland as a pre-emergent in an edible orchard.
Right.
And we weren't sure, it, you know, does that pre-emergent somehow soak into the roots? Does that chemical get into the fruit? Vincent said, absolutely not. That's not the way pre-emergents work. They're not designed. They're absolutely safe to put in an orchard around trees, shrubs, edible trees. Now, Dow doesn't own Surfland anymore, and they had a few other products that they do have in substitute. But Surfland is still manufactured, and he still knew a lot about the product just because it was one Dow owned mm-hmm. for a number of years. Mm-hmm. But you can use that pre-emergent in your...
Surfland, for sure. You do need to read label. You know, and we just... always read the label. Just make sure that whatever you're applying is safe to use, you know, wherever you're applying it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and they use their product now is Snapshot. Yeah. Are you familiar with that one?
I have heard of Snapshot. Yeah. So what happens is that, you know, they develop new products. They'll drop the you know, the patent or the trademark or whatever on the old products, and then doesn't mean the product goes away. Glyphosate. Monsanto had the patent on that for years and years. That, you know, Everybody knew it as Roundup. Now the patent's gone. They still make it, but so do a lot of other people. So, yeah.
And one interesting thing, Dimension, you had mentioned as well,
mm-hmm.
because that Surfland doesn't control
spurge.
And that was the one thing you said after we got off the air. It's a great product, but we've got to... If you get spurge, that's not going to solve it. So you've got to go to your Dimension or Gallery or something like that.
Right, right.
So, little follow-up for our Tucson caller from several weeks ago. There's always such a great just body of resources at the Shade.
It is.
One day is not enough time, in my opinion. Now, for you, you're probably like going through the motion, like, I've...
you know,
this could be a half a day for me.
You know, it's hard to get people. Though there's a lot of people that go there to get their continuing education credits. And so for them to take more than one day off to do that is pretty tough. But they can get a lot of CEUs in one day by going through these tracks and taking these certain classes. So that's one of the big attractions for that is you have a lot of professionals in the landscape field, you know, associated fields with arborists and parks and rec and those people that are, you know, applying fertilizers, you know, maybe spraying certain things. They can keep their, you know, certifications intact by getting their CEUs.
One other interesting thing in the booth next to ours at Shade was the Arizona State Forestry Division. And we've talked about the Champion Tree Program that they have. You can find a tree. Well, what it is it's a recognition of the largest tree of that species known in Arizona. And they have some great trees on there. There's an ironwood tree that's on Carefree Highway and a wash that you can actually see from the road if you know what you're looking for. It's on the south side. It's what is known as the largest ironwood tree in Arizona. There's the juniper tree that the Granite Mountain Hotshot saved that's, well, next to Granite. It's on the base of Granite Mountain. We broadcast live there last year on the ridge. Well, they had a whole list of trees that don't have champion trees on there yet.
Yeah,
some very surprising names on there that I thought, well, man, we could probably go down the street and elect five of them. And they said because there's no champion tree there, you could nominate a seedling, and it would still
call
and be
the first call. Somebody might pass you up after a while, but
yeah.
Interesting. So once this champion tree by species is named, it can be supplanted by the next bigger that we find.
Right.
Now, where could we, because you're going to create, you know, we've got people that bag summits, that climb mountains, they want to hit the highest point mm-hmm. in every county. You're going to now have champion tree baggers. Where would you go to see this list of which champion trees have actually been named? And where they're located, do they locate them by GPS coordinates or do they just give you the general direction?
Not all of them are completely publicized. For example, that juniper tree, they just tell you the area it's in. And if you find it, there's a monument and they've got a scarf there for every one of the fallen hotshots.
So it's a treasure hunt.
Well, not all of them. Some of them are very obvious.
Okay.
There's a huge cottonwood tree in the Dewey Humboldt area that is a. It's also a heritage tree, which has some sort of significant history. And it said that Doc Holliday, Wyatt Earp, you know, everyone of the famous Old West icons rested under that tree because it was a stagecoach stop from Prescott to Tombstone.
Wow.
So it's a heritage tree and a champion tree, but it would all be azsf.gov. And from there, you could find what they call the Magnificent Tree Program. And then it's broken down to champion tree, witness tree, and heritage tree.
I like that.
And a
That's
witness
cool.
tree witnessed what was here when Arizona became a state. So that actual, that cottonwood is all three of those. A witness,
had to be
a champion, and a heritage.
Around 1912.
Before 1912.
Wow.
Yeah. So a lot of fun. We're going to start. There's a live Southern Oak on there, and I'm going to start. The nomination is only this one sheet. Very quick to fill out. I'm gonna nominate Harper's Live Southern Oak on Hayden Road to start that one.
It'd be a good one.
It's as big a one as I've seen.
It'd be a good one.
Y'all also have a bottle tree on your lot. There's not a bottle tree
I
on
saw that
list.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you know, most of these are pretty common. You know, bottle trees, Vitex, carob. I'm sure there, there's some big old carob trees out there somewhere. There's some of these that are kind of marginal here, but they're, you know, they're around. Magnolias. Not a lot of magnolias here. But
so if you
there's
have
some
one,
in Central Phoenix.
There's a pretty good chance you could.
Yeah, you could get your name on this list. Yeah. You could be famous.
It'd be a great way to just help grow the whole awareness to the tree program, too, getting everyone involved. So lots of fun. When we get back, Scott and Gilbert's first on the line at 1-888-767-4348.